And rolling. Hello there, Andy and Zach here, A to Z No BS Show. Checking in with episode 85.
Hey man.
On Labor Day, no less.
Look at us putting in the work.
Team no days off over here.
Team no days off, although I did consider taking the, I was like, maybe I would have taken the afternoon off because I knew you were coming. When did you get back, yesterday or today?
Last night.
Okay, so you got back late last night.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe we could take Monday off. But then Tuesday, I have to work in the afternoon. So mm-hmm. I would not have been able to podcast. And then that moves us to Wednesday.
And then by then, the week is basically over.
Yeah. And then we're trying to publish by Friday. It's a tight window.
Yeah.
A lot of work goes into this show between Monday and Friday.
The level of eye rolling that's going on right now is... something else.
I literally just wait for you to email it to me, and then I have to listen to it one time, and then I'm like, tee it up.
Yeah, man. Making the magic happen. Yeah, as much as I hate to admit it, Monday is just the day. It has to be the day.
Yeah.
You know? So, it's a privilege to do it every Monday, that being said. Labor Day or not.
That's true. I like that perspective. There we go.
So, we were talking last episode about fitness gym businesses and the ones that Andy may or may not buy.
With my infinite money supply.
Yeah. But other things that Andy may or may not buy include some sort of erg. So you were saying that you are considering a ski erg or a bike, mm-hmm. Airdyne bike. The C2 Row mm-hmm. also has its hat in the ring. Are those the big three? Are there any others?
I think those are the big three. Aside from like a sled of some kind, as far as like a conditioning cardio tool or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't have the space for a sled.
Is an erg technically anything that is like fan resisted? Is that my understanding?
I have no idea. I don't think the ski erg has a fan. Well, does it?
It's wind resisted.
Is
you,
it?
Yeah, because you can adjust the dial.
That's
just
right.
Like
it's just on the back side of it, right? Or like in the middle and the front.
It's pretty much front and center. For the ones that I've seen.
I mean, it's been a minute. Yeah, that's right. It's right there.
But all that to say, the type of machine that is wind, offers wind resistance.
Right.
So like on, for those who aren't familiar, you've probably seen a Concept 2 or a C2 ski erg. You basically sit down and you...
That's the rower.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the rower, yes. You sit down.
I'm sorry. What am I saying? The rower, obviously, yes, you sit down and you mimic the same motion that you would, obviously, if you were on the row team in college, the rowing team. So it's just hands forward, hands back, pumping with legs, and the chain somehow is linked to a fan that you turn, and that's what provides the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
People are probably also familiar with the Airdyne bike or the Echo bike or any sort of fan bike.
Schwinn makes one.
Yeah.
There's a handful out there, actually.
Yeah. You pump your arms, you pump your legs, and you turn the fan, so that's wind resistance.
Yep.
And the ski erg is probably my favorite.
I think I like it, too.
You got handles, basically like cable handles, that you pull down and back.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get skiing into like a squat or a hinge motion, just like you're throwing your poles into your ski type motion.
Yeah. Only this one's safer. You don't break your leg.
Right. You you have minimal risk of...
of snapping a leg.
Of running into a ski lift pole. So, yeah. I've only used the ski erg a few times. Mostly at Mike's gym,
mm-hmm.
when I used to see a client out there back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we would always do the ski erg.
It's fun. I mean, it's a fun tool. And the bike is too. And the rower's fun. It's just where I'm trying to figure out which one I want to get, because they are not, they're not terribly expensive, but they're not cheap. And I need to know where it's going to live in my small gym. And it needs to be portable in my small gym. And it needs to have a really good, like, return on investment. Like, I need to use it. Not every day, not with every workout, not with every person, but I need to use it with enough frequency to justify having it occupy space in my gym. Mm-hmm. And so they each have their pros and cons, and I was asking Zach off air what his thoughts were. Yeah. So kind of floating some ideas around. So
there's pros and cons. There's big pros and cons, I think, to each.
Right.
The bike, the fam bike, is probably the most kind of popular. Well, maybe that and the row, but for like your high intensity conditioning, the bike is pretty popular. But the drawback there is that if you're really going high intensity, good luck lasting more than 10 or 15 seconds.
Right. You might be vomiting on the floor.
Yeah. So that's a little tricky. You can push the intensity a little bit more, I would say, on the ski and on the row. So if you want to do something more like 30 to 45 second intervals.
And that's probably what I would do, is something like 30 on, 30 off. Maybe work it in with, like, I don't know, TRX rows, push-ups, or, you know, some sort of lower body something as like a finisher sequence. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be like a, it's not going to be a warm-up tool necessarily. It could be. Probably not necessarily going to be a warm-up tool. It would be used almost exclusively for like the last 10, 15 minute finishers. But yeah, I mean, the bike requires moving it around in the space, and I have to adjust the height to meet the like the height demands of the client. So it's a little, and it's heavy. I don't know if you've ever tried to move one. They're not, mm-hmm. they're not that convenient to move. So there's that. Whereas the skier can probably sit where I would park it, and I never have to move it, and I don't have to adjust it. Like, I can just send people to it, tell them to rip for whatever the interval is. They can pop off of it. There's no real, I don't have to adjust anything. I have to move it or whatever. So I think the skier right now is kind of edging out the other two, but only barely.
Yeah.
So, and then I'm trying to figure out if I'm buying this because I'm, because I need it and I would use it, or because I'm bored and just want a new element in the space. Mm. I mean, I've always wanted one ever since I opened. It just was cost prohibitive at the time, and I needed other things that were more important to do my job. So I've been delaying this purchase for a long time, fully intending on doing it. Now that I have, I'm in a position to do it, I'm like, well, I need to make a very sound purchasing decision.
Well, I would say the Erg is the only type of exercise equipment that you don't currently have.
Right. I have pretty much everything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think the ski makes the most sense right now. Again, because I can just leave it where I, wherever it is I decide to park it, leave it there, send people to it, and then that way I'm not moving a bike around or like accommodating equipment or, you know, people are having to move around the bike in like different weird combinations or whatever. Yeah. Not a huge deal. I could probably just park it right outside the bathroom door, sort of. Like right in that corner.
Yeah.
And it would not be a big deal.
Yeah, the lat and tricep engagement that you can really get on those is really fun.
Yeah.
I remember getting super sore triceps from the ski erg workout.
It's great. It's a good tool. So I'm figured out, but I also have some other stuff, like some other charges come through late last month. So I'm waiting to see where things land. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just trying to figure out equipment.
Exciting times at AVG S&C.
Mm-hmm. It's good. I was talking to my clients today about whether or not I would get a sled, and the obvious answer is no, because I don't have space. I don't have space to store it, let alone push it. Like, in theory, I could be on the parking lot, but there's a number of issues there. The first and most obvious one being a liability issue in case something happens in the parking lot. I don't know if my liability insurance covers the parking lot. Right. It might. I don't know. but I don't know for sure. So why risk it?
Yeah.
And the other and more obvious is that, you know, before 8 or 9 a.m., yeah, I could use it because there's nobody in the parking lot. But once all those other businesses open, that lot gets busy.
Right.
So you can't be pushing sleds in the parking lot.
You know, not to give you one more thing to think about buying, but, you know, they have like those tanks, those sled tanks that are actually on wheels.
Mm-hmm. And you can like adjust the resistance on the wheels or whatever?
I think so.
Yeah. I know which one you're talking about. And I thought about getting one of those too, but they're also very big.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be very big, probably very expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
There's not really a lot in fitness that's not terribly expensive.
Except for this podcast.
Yeah.
This podcast is not, it's not terribly expensive for the listeners.
Right. It's marginally expensive for the beer drinking that we do.
Yeah.
Not today, though.
That's right. This might be, is this the first episode ever?
No. When we got back from Austin. Remember? Neither of us were having anything to drink that day. So this
okay.
will be the second podcast, yeah. at least the second podcast that we're not drinking beer.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't really have a reason. I didn't really get after it this weekend. I just got after it with my dad last night because he came over for dinner.
Right.
And so I was like, I'll have beers and tomorrow's Labor Day. And then I woke up at 4:30 and I was like, woof.
Yeah.
Not feeling great.
Well, I am supportive of any time where you do not need or want to drink a beer.
Thanks, dude.
I'm not the friend who says you always have to drink to have a good time. That's not me.
No, I don't think so. I don't think you've ever like slid me a drink when I was empty. I don't think you're like monitoring my alcohol intake.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, totally.
For not indulging my drinking habit.
Peer pressuring you.
Yeah. But, well, anyway, so we can parlay that into two things. The first is, see how sharp I am today without the beer? No.
Dude, I couldn't help but notice how sharp you are.
I'm a little sharper. Two things. The first is, we haven't talked about nutrition in a while, and you have a different goal now. And I think, have the same goal, but I'm thinking about diving in a little bit deeper.
Mm.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about our nutrition goals, because they are technically competing. They're not competing, but like...
They're whatever. Racing against each other.
Right. And then the other thing is the thing we didn't finish on the podcast last week, which was the pull-up part.
That's right.
So we talked about modifying or how we progress push-ups in the gym, like different, how we program it for people who are trying to get their first push-up. More specifically, I think it was a woman that was asking, how do you get your female clients to get their first real push-up?
Mm-hmm.
And so we discussed our progressions. The other part of that question was pull-ups, and we didn't get to it. So we have two more things on the docket today. Look how sharp we are.
Woo!
Look at us.
Trying to keep up with this guy.
So, yeah. So we'll table I'll come back with an update on what I've decided with the ergs.
Okay.
We'll have an erg update here. Who knows? This month, maybe next month. Might not even be this calendar year. I don't know. I'm just going to keep sitting on this idea for a little while.
Okay.
So, all right. Nutrition.
Yep.
Which we haven't talked about on the podcast in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have different goals.
Yep.
So do you want to tell the audience what your goal is now?
Sure.
We're into September, so like summer's not really behind us, but like pretty much behind
us. It's on its way out.
On its way out. So
yeah.
what's your fitness nutrition goal?
Hey, big. Get big. Big is a mindset. Big is the diet. So... I am training hard, eating big, bulking up, all that good stuff.
All right, so I have two questions.
Yep.
What are you eating, and how are you measuring your progress?
Great questions.
And third question, is your training any different than earlier in the year? Like,
sure.
How does your training, does it look the same? Does it look different? So... What are you eating? How do you know you're making progress? What is your training looking like? God, I'm so sharp.
Wow, great questions. First one, training, right?
What are you eating?
Oh, what am I eating? I would say what I am eating hasn't changed very much, but the quantity is.
Mm.
I think one of the things that's kind of key in nutrition is like, just for the sake of like having a consistent gut biome and consistent digestion, all that good stuff, I think having a simple, consistent diet is pretty important. And I would imagine both for slimming down and for bulking up, like, for lack of a better term, like the quality of your digestion is going to be pretty important, especially as you're getting older. But for me, that is for a first meal, oatmeal, fruit, and whey protein. So taking a page from your book and putting protein in the oatmeal, that whole thing. Occasionally I'll have a protein bar. I've actually gotten, I used to eat protein bars all the time. But I've gotten more away from that because it's, I don't know, man. At the end of the day, it's candy. And oftentimes, like, you know, you have a couple protein bars, it kind of sits kind of weird on the stomach.
Yeah. Well, and they're calorie dense for the amount of protein that you get in them.
Yeah.
Like, because of all the other stuff that's in it, like 200 and the Think Thins that I had a Think Thin today, actually. A client brought me one, which is great because I didn't have a protein bar or protein shake.
Those are delicious.
They are. But they're like 210, 220 calories and like 20 grams of protein.
Right.
So there's a lot of other stuff that's in there. And they're satiating and they're great to travel and in a pinch. And truthfully, because of your goals of putting on size, probably more in line because they are calorically dense.
Yeah.
But for my goals, they are not.
Right.
A good choice for me.
Yeah. So again, I think if you're looking at it on paper, protein bars, I can kind of take or leave. Yeah, just for me, I'd put it in the leave category as much as possible just because, again, I'm not a super duper, like, quote unquote, clean eating enthusiast or Bible thumper. Overall, like when we're just talking about like nutritional habits, it's one thing if it's like a grab and go situation, but I have the luxury, I am blessed with the time and the opportunity to make mostly whole food meals. So that's kind of how I want to keep it and how I feel best, really. So oatmeal, fruit, whey protein, sometimes eggs, egg whites. I'll usually have, depending on the day, like another protein shake, like with a banana, protein, collagen. Again, just in the interest of getting in some consistent protein intake throughout the day. But it's my dinner that's usually like the biggest meal of the day. And that's usually, well, the big macros or the macro drivers there are jasmine rice and beef.
I love me some jasmine rice.
Love jasmine rice. Yeah.
Any white rice, really, but jasmine or arborio or what's the other one? There's a third one. Anyway, there's another rice that I get sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's simple. I think if anybody's familiar with Stan Efferding's vertical diet, that's kind of a staple, just like rice and beef. Again, it's easily digestible. In general for a lot of us. And again, you're getting in a lot of protein, your carbs, and yeah, it's just easy to make a lot of, and
easy to measure out.
Easy to measure out. Exactly.
You probably just top it with some salsa.
Yeah.
Spice up that beef a little bit and then top it with some salsa or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been on a Trader Joe's pepita salsa kick. It's really good.
Word.
I think Pepita. I think it's some sort of gourd, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I've never heard of it.
I don't know. In any case, it's pretty darn good. So that's kind of the gist of my diet.
Okay.
So pretty simple, pretty consistent.
Then the second question was, how do you know you're making progress towards a goal?
Well, if I really cared about making progress, which, I mean, overall I do, but like we've had this conversation in some form or fashion where it's like, you can be super duper tight on your like measuring of progress, but it's like, what are you willing to change depending on like what your metrics are?
Mm.
So it's like, the biggest thing for me is the mirror and progress photos.
Mm. Fair enough.
So if your scale weight is obviously scaling up over the course of time, and subjectively, I like the way that I look, that's kind of enough for me.
Mm.
And I know that I'm eating more, and I know that I'm training harder, and that I'm getting stronger. So it's like, you know, if my weight isn't going up, am I willing to eat more? Am I willing to train more?
Mm.
The answer to both of those questions is probably no.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? But I can tell if I'm getting a little fuzzy around the edges more than what I would like. And that's a pretty simple fix of portion control.
Right.
Or checking in on the booze.
Mm.
Or the other obvious things.
Right.
You know? So it's actually funny. I'm wrapping up a small group hypertrophy-focused coaching program for some online clients. And we actually had a whole kind of lesson on measuring progress. So what I would say is, especially for someone who actually like has a dedicated hypertrophy goal that like has like kind of a tighter timeline and it's like a real big priority, what I recommend is checking your scale weight 2 to 4 times a week and taking like a running weekly average.
Mm.
So like we know how scale weight fluctuates, but if you take a weekly average and then you plot that weekly average over the course of 6 to 12 weeks, you should see an obvious progression, you know,
right.
one way or the other. Apart from that, I think body composition measuring devices are also very notoriously inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, back in the Lifetime days, we had the thing that you stood on.
Right.
Bioimpedance.
Yeah.
That would go through your feet and your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, if you're 1 inch taller or shorter from like the measurement that you're actually like putting into the machine,
mm-hmm.
That could show a big difference.
If you're dehydrated.
If you're dehydrated. If you're
overhydrated.
Overhydrated. If you've eaten, if you've not eaten,
right,
all this stuff. So like, and then like the handheld one, there was like literally a button that you could push for like athlete or non-athlete.
Right.
What does that mean? Who knows? But that could spell the difference between like, it could be as much as like a 6% body fat difference.
Yeah, and that's pretty vast.
And that's like, yeah, that pretty much negates the whole thing. So I don't really put too much stock in those. Obviously, if you have the means to do like DEXA scans and stuff like that, more power to you. But otherwise, it's trending scale weight, your front, back, and side progress photos. Mm. It's your performance in the gym, I think, is obviously a good metric. And something that I think is also important when you're doing like a hypertrophy-based program is doing a lot of exercises that you are already really good at so that You know, as you're getting bigger, if you're putting on muscle, you will get stronger.
Right.
You know, one rep max and rep maxes should be going up. So there's one kind of school of thought that goes like, oh, to trigger new growth, like you should be doing a bunch of different exercises, you know, bodybuilding splits, doing all the isolation stuff and that whole thing, which I think there's merit to that. But I think like, and this is something that I was talking about like with these folks who are doing this program, we kind of picked out two or three exercises, like compound exercises they were really good at, really mostly trying to find like one big squat and one big push exercise. So that like, if we know that you're already good at back squats or front squats and your rep maxes are going up, that's like a good sign.
Right.
You know, because you're, or, and then like bench press, you're probably not going to get stronger on the bench press with the type of programming that I was doing, unless you were getting more muscle.
Right.
You know, so I think measuring your progress in the gym is also a great way to like, again, in this particular way, measure hypertrophy gains. Because again, at a certain point, you're only going to see a breakthrough in performance if you're actually putting on muscle. And then what was the last one? I think it was, a measurement device is if your clothes are getting tighter, faster than your belt is getting tighter.
Okay.
You know?
I don't wear a belt.
Right. Or, you know, your waist or whatever. Like, obviously, you know, your waist measurement might bump up a little bit. But, like, if your sleeves are really filling out, if you're, you know, obviously your shirts, your jeans, if those are all getting tighter around the edge, but you're only either staying the same or maybe only just getting a little bit tighter through the belt, through the waist, that's also a really good sign.
Word.
So those are like the main things that like obviously I would impart on clients.
Okay.
To keep a look at.
All right, and then the last question: what does your training look like? Is it different than when you're trying to be like sun's out, guns out, ready for the beach or whatever, or the pool? Is your training split different? What does it look like? Yada yada yada.
Not much. I will say it's probably, I am going harder on the main lifts and I'm trimming back on accessory movements quite a bit. So that may or may not long-term turn out to be like the best approach. I think you could make a strong argument either way. But I know like for me, for where I'm at in my training, I think going, because really now I'm only just getting back into like decently heavy squats and deadlifts.
Right.
Again, because of the whole leg issue. So for me, like those are areas that I know are weak points where there's gold to be mined.
Right. You've got some room to grow.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so I think it's going a little bit harder, a little bit heavier on the main lifts, trimming back the accessories a little bit. I think that's the main thing. Yeah.
When did you start this endeavor?
About, I would say in earnest, probably 6 weeks ago.
And are you meeting all these metrics, these goals so far?
I am.
Nice.
Yeah.
How much has your weight gone up?
I will be honest.
You don't know?
That is the main thing that I have not been keeping good track of.
Oh, why?
I weigh myself very infrequently and very obviously not consistently.
Yeah.
So, I don't really know.
It's one of those things too, like I think if you've been doing this for as long as you and I have, I think there are phases where there's a lot of zeal, a lot of, you know, motivation to like do the thing. And so like during those time periods, I will dial in my nutrition a lot more obsessive, let's say obsessively. I'll just be more aware of measuring, weighing in, getting to the gym, tracking my progress. Right now, I'm just in kind of cruise control, so I'm not really doing any of those things. I'm going to start, I think. I did, and then I quit, and I got to restart.
To be fair, I almost think that, like, especially at the point like where we are, going one way or the other, like almost like no matter what your goal is, like to get stronger, to put on mass, to get, let's say, better conditions, or to drop body fat, I really only think that that kind of represents like a 15 to 20% deviation. You know, like if I'm just imagining like our training lifestyle, for lack of a better term, as like a road, I'm really only seeing like the differences that we're making, like one way or the other, is like an extra few inches on this side of the road. Like I'm only maybe deviating from training like 20%. I'm deviating from my nutrition like 20%.
Right.
The 80% is like still the same.
Right. So I was asking about the training part because I figured it was probably a lot the same.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people get, well, let me pause. Let me say what I'm going to say and then back up. I think a lot of people get caught up in this idea of like if they're trying to lose weight that they should be doing like high intensity interval training. And I think it has its place. And I have done it and I've had a lot of success with it. But I've also, because I've shifted focus to more move fast, tempo-based stuff, I lost a little bit of top-end strength and mass because I just couldn't recover quick enough to like really move some weight because I was moving fast. Mm-hmm. And it worked. Like I got really lean. So it did its job. But I lost a little bit of strength and mass along the way. So it's a way. I think it has its place. I think you just have to be careful about how you dose it, like anything else. And also, if you enjoy it, do it. If you hate it, you don't have to do it. But your training can, by and large, be about the same. Yeah. It's just a matter of nutrition, you know, intervention that really helps dictate kind of how things will go. Yeah. And you can, you know, you and I both know you can shift some focus here and there. But to your point, it's not like a complete 180 as far as like what you were doing and now only high intensity interval training, like no big lifts. Like that's not it at all. It's just like basically the same shit.
Yeah.
And just monitoring progress.
I'm also sleeping more.
Were you not sleeping more?
I'm making it a point to get to bed a little bit earlier and to take advantage more of like the days where I don't have to be up super early to go to work. Normally I would just, you know, get up at the same 5:30-ish, you know, alarm. But when I have the opportunity to sleep in an extra hour and a half or so, I definitely take it.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm actually going the opposite. I think I'm gonna start waking up at 4 a.m. every day, regardless of when I have to be at work. Did I tell you I showed up late to work the other day? Did I tell you about that? It was last Wednesday.
Oh, yes, where you totally forgot.
Yeah, that I was just sitting on the couch. I was awake, drinking my coffee, looked at my phone, and I was like, wait a second. I have to be at work in 4 minutes. So I called a client, and I was like, yeah, let yourselves in and get started. And yeah, I was 15 minutes late.
That's not bad.
First and only time this happened in the year of operating the business.
I have had that happen. Again, it's rare, but like every now and then, for some reason, it's like you forget like what time means, like what your actual calendar is.
Right. Like the night before, I set my alarm for 5:15 a.m., which I never get up at that time. I don't know why I set it for that time. I think I meant 4:15, but I set 5:15 and just didn't. So I'm sitting there because I like to give myself plenty of time to eat breakfast and drink my coffee and watch the news and get ready. And all of a sudden, I was like, fuck. So I was like running out the door. But anyway.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I feel like consistent wake times is probably good for like.
It is.
Yeah. But yeah. To your point, it's your life. And if you don't have to get up, then you don't have to get up.
Thanks, man.
Dude, I've been getting in bed like before 8:30 a lot of nights now.
It's glorious.
It's crazy. But it feels good.
Yeah.
And I've been told that that'll be good for like when the baby's here, like having a consistent go to bed time as parents and consistent wake up time as parents will be good. Yeah. So we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm curious what kind of a sleeper you're going to have.
Well, if we follow this baby book that we have, hopefully a good sleeper.
Great.
Yeah, we've had some friends that have used the same book with a lot of success, so we're hoping for the same.
Right on.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to...
Yeah, it's called Moms on Call for anybody who's got a baby on the way. Moms on Call.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, training.
So how about you? What nutritional training priorities are you making, and how are you measuring progress?
Well, right now I'm not measuring progress at all. My weekends tend to derail a lot of progress. So progress for me right now is getting back into like a good rhythm on weekends in terms of nutrition and training.
Yeah. I think also, to be fair, to kind of play off what I was saying before, measuring progress can also just be being objective about your behavioral consistency.
Right.
So, yeah. Right.
Like taking an audit. I'm not unaware that I blow it on the weekends when I like to drink beer and hang out with friends. Like, I get it. Like, that's part of the problem. So just awareness. But I also, like, I lost at best. So November of last year, so you broke your leg, I tore my arm in the spring of 2021. I decided that I was going to eat a lot of food and just try to keep or put on more mass through the summer and into the winter, instead of losing a lot of progress, because my fear being that had I done my typical thing, which was diet down or cut calories, because I didn't have use of an arm, my training would suffer. I would just lose a lot of progress. So I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm going to go the other direction. And I, at the time, I was probably about 175, 180 pounds. I ballooned up to 203 by November of last year. Then I got tired of that and got uncomfortable in my clothes and nothing fit, and I had to go buy more jeans and all that. And so I decided to diet back down. And at best, since then, I cruised through like April, May of this year doing pretty well as far as like tracking and dieting down, and got to about May, and then I sort of stagnated, and then I kind of lost interest. But I got down as low as 178. Mm-hmm. And at my leanest, like lean, I'm about 168. So I'm hoping that I'm a little bit heavier than that after last year putting on some mass. I don't know. I never got down to about 175, so I don't know what that looks like. Right. So I'm probably holding around 180, 183 right now. So awareness of my weekends. Nutritionally, here's what I did, because you and I were talking about this the other day. You don't have to eat as much protein as we once thought. Mm-hmm. So the 1 gram per pound of body weight might be a little bit more than you need. So I went in to my FitnessPal and I dialed my protein intake down and gave it back to carbs. What I'm finding is historically I've done really well with the oatmeal breakfast thing and then having like protein veg lunch only. But because of the structure of my day, and right now because I'm working out like usually after lunch now, I just don't have a lot of energy. Like I am done. Like I am lethargic by this time most days. I just, even with caffeine with lunch or like late coffee, I just don't got it. So I started adding the jasmine rice back to my meal prep, and it really helped kick it up a notch. Mm-hmm. And when I train, I get a really great pump.
Right.
And it feels good. So like it's a very momentous, a forward momentum. I'm like, okay, this feels good, looks good. I have energy to give. Like I want to be here. I want to get like go hard. Whereas before, I'd go there after lunch with nothing on the system and after a long day of training clients, and I was like, I don't want to be here. And I'd find ways of like not cutting corners, but I'd start compromising like not even halfway through. 20 minutes in, I was like, Maybe I'll just do four sets, not five. Maybe I'll just do two sets, not three. I'll, you know, maybe I'll just shortchange this rest period and just do a couple more reps and then fucking get out of here.
Yeah.
So now that I've added some carbs back into my diet, I am less likely to do that.
Sure.
Training wise, not much different. The only thing I'm still like chasing down is a heavier squat. And I have stopped doing deadlifts. RDLs, and my back just doesn't love deadlifts. So RDLs, my back does better. And it's better for like mass. So while I'm not trying to add mass right now, I am trying to keep what I got. So Romanian deadlifts or kickstand RDLs or whatever do better for me than deadlifts. But squats, front squats, lunges. And then upper body, because of the shoulder, because I've been having a lot of shoulder pain, what I'm finding is at gym five, kind of those like 300 rep workouts or whatever, I kind of follow a similar template. I'm like, depending on the day, I'll do either two or three pushes and two or three pulls. And of all of those, at least three sets each. So trying to get at least 6 to 10, maybe 12 sets per push, per pull while I'm there. And just either, if I'm feeling good, I might EMOM it, or I might give myself a shorter rest period, or I might superset something, or I might rest for a long time. If I feel like I got time, I'm not in any rush, I'll keep the weight heavy. I'll give myself a long breather, like 3 minutes between sets. So it just depends on the day and how I'm feeling, but I try to make it tough regardless. And I use a lot of machine-based stuff because I can pump it away. And two, because the shoulder, I had barbell bench pressed in months. Last Monday, I was close grip benching because my shoulder typically tolerates that. And I was lifting at my gym. So I was like, I'm just going to close grip bench and do an upper body session here. My shoulder hurt for like 4 days after that. Like, and I knew it doing it. I was like, man, this just doesn't feel great. But like, I'm going to see what I got.
Right.
It's, you know, maybe I'll move my hands around, change my grip, whatever. And then my shoulder hurt for days. So the machines at Gym 5 give me the opportunity to really rip. And my shoulder doesn't hurt so bad after.
Right.
So just effort, man. It's I'm actually in a phase right now in terms of training. I'm in a phase where I don't give a aside from the squat, I don't give a shit what I do. I literally go into Gym 5 and I'll be like, this is available, this is available. It's kind of like our Saturday workouts. I'm like, I don't know. I'll start with pull downs. I don't care. Whatever. Let's start with pull downs. And I'll just rip, rip, rip. And then I'm like, you know what? I like that chest press machine. Let's do that. And as long as the effort is high, then I'm okay with that. So upper body sessions are just pump usually, and lower body is a little bit more dialed in because of the back issue and because I do want to chase that squat. Aside from that, I'm just like, you know what? Show up and put some effort into it. And now and I've had the rice, I've got some energy behind it. So yeah. I'm like, all right, let's go.
Hell yeah.
You know what kills? You know what I've been doing that hurts me?
What's that?
5x8 or 10 EMOM hack squat.
Ow. Yeah, that's gnarly.
Ow, ow, ow. My quads, like, I'll step off that thing and my, like, legs are shaking.
Perfect.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that. Like, again, like, kind of more loosey-goosey, kind of like our Saturdays. But as long as the effort is high and the volume is between 3 and 5 sets, I'm like, you know what? That's good for right now. And just work on the weekend thing. Oh, and one more thing. I have been taking a new medication that actually makes me tired, like pretty lethargic. So like after lunch, I would occasionally, especially if I have a wide open afternoon, I would like take an hour long nap. Just like lay on the couch. I'm pretty certain that that habit has helped lead to some weight gain because I'm not moving as much. I'm laying around the house and it's been hot. So I haven't been wanting to be outside. So I'm like, aside from the workout, I'm not doing a lot of moving at the house. So my new thing, and I started it today, is that I will walk around my neighborhood after lunch at least one lap, which I told you was 25 minutes to do the big loop.
Right.
At least one lap after lunch. So it keeps me moving.
Yep.
So I can't lay down on the couch and fall asleep. I have to go outside, go walk around my block. So.
Hell yeah.
We'll see. And I haven't started tracking anything again. I just need to get back in the routine of like, and I hadn't even fallen out of the routine of like meal prep.
Sure.
It's just, you know, one of those things where I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Measuring, yeah, I mean, measuring progress is one way to look at it or go about it. But measuring consistency, measuring the habits, just having some things you can just have as like a daily checklist.
Yeah.
Is also so important. Yeah, because again, I mean, going back to my point, it's like, well, if my progress is one way or the other way, is that going to change the behavior goals? You know, probably not, unless, you know, there's something, you know, really wild, unless there's some really wild outlier, so to speak. So, yeah.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about this. Well, I ate a bunch of steak last night and a bunch of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Corn on the cob, roasted veggies, tomahawk steak.
Love that.
It was pretty amazing, actually. Oh, and some sautéed onion and mushrooms that went up with the steak. It's fucking awesome.
Speaking of tomahawk steak, I may have mentioned that my dad is recently retired.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went out to dinner over this weekend when I was home. And I'm pretty sure my dad ordered his very first tomahawk steak.
Nice.
Ever. So he was pretty happy about that. Now, is a tomahawk, is that one cut on one side of the bone and another cut on the other side?
What, no, tomahawk is bone-in ribeye, basically. It's okay. A giant, it's a thick-ass, the one I bought yesterday was that thick. Thick-ass ribeye with a big bone on one side.
Yeah.
And when you cook it, or when you're done cooking it, you cut down the bone to remove the steak from the bone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I usually gnaw on that bone.
Yeah, like a caveman.
Yeah. Dude, it's so good. I reverse sear mine. Holy moly, dude, it is so good. I don't mess around with my steak.
It's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and then Megan's, going back to the nutrition thing, this has been difficult. Not difficult, but just a different challenge. Megan's appetite is all over the place.
Mm.
So sometimes, like, I just don't have the same enthusiasm for cooking, like, baller meals, like my Andy's Eats things.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been doing any of those. I've been usually doing, like, salmon and vegetables or steak and vegetables.
Right.
Or, I don't know, tonight I'm going to do grilled chicken and a mixed green salad. Now, she'll eat the salad, but she won't eat chicken.
Mm.
Like, she just doesn't eat a lot of meat. Which is fine. I've been encouraging her because she needs more protein because she's, you know, growing a baby and shit. So I'm encouraging her to eat some, but she just doesn't have an appetite for it.
Right.
So it's hard because I'm like, well, the salads is a good thing. I like the salads. It's good fiber, good vegetables, whatever. But everything else, she just doesn't have an appetite for. So my enthusiasm for coming up with like a new, like, oh, I want to try this recipe or I want to do this is kind of flatlined lately because she won't eat it.
Sure.
So I'm like, well, I'm going to put forth all this effort to have like a bunch of leftovers that she's not going to eat. Like, I don't know. So anyway, that's just been a new, not challenge, just something to navigate lately.
Sure. Yeah. And I can imagine depending on the palate of your kid, that is also obviously going to impact things to say the least.
You know, it's funny, on this side of it, it's really easy for me to be like, I'm still going to get my workouts in, I'm going to go for walks, and I'm going to eat healthy, and I'm going to take that kid on walks with me all the time, and like be outdoorsy and go camping, as if every other parent, first-time parent, didn't also say all that shit before. So it'll be interesting, the conversations we have around training and nutrition when I have to worry about a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
And schedules and sleep and or lack of sleep or whatever. We'll see how that changes.
Yeah.
Hopefully some of these consistent habits that I'm building right now will remain. But yeah. I've heard that it's almost impossible. So we'll see.
Well, cooking for one other adult is challenging enough. Cooking for an adult and a kid. That's family, full-fledged family. But family, is notoriously fraught with challenge.
Yeah. Well, luckily the baby is going to be a potato for most of like the few months.
Foreseeable, yeah.
Yeah, first few months he's going to be a potato in a basket, basically.
Yeah. The baby's only going to be eating one thing.
Yeah. So if I bring a baby over here, I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet either.
I got chocolate milk.
I don't know about that yet. Yeah, okay. Let me ask my pediatrician. Like, is chocolate milk okay? No, I'll be bringing formula. I'll be literally having a baby in my arm and like feeding it while we're talking about training.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
Either that or we'll go meet up at East Nashville Beer Works.
That too.
Well, it'll be cold. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, pull-ups? Or are we out of time?
Well, we're getting a little close, but we can knock out pull-ups.
Oh, yeah, we can knock out pull-ups because mine's really easy. But you go first. I've been jibber-jabbering.
Okay. Well, I have a free ebook on this where I actually detail all the steps. So if anybody's interested in that, zachhenderson.com/pull-up, all one word.
Okay.
But let me see if I can get this right. And I'm pretty sure I still stand by this some 6 or 8 years later since I wrote it. I might jumble this up. But in general, you got to get comfortable with a straight arm bar hang. That's a pretty key thing.
Mm.
So like, there's just some amount of like conditioning the grip that needs to happen, or just conditioning the shoulder and elbow joints to be in that position.
Mm.
So I think straight arm hangs are very important. Just to like get comfortable and confident with, obviously starting like with your feet on the ground so you don't have to absorb all your body weight. But I think eventually like training up to a 30 second straight arm hang body weight is a good first standard, performance standard. Working in the scapular pull-ups, so like letting your shoulders go loose and then pulling your shoulders down into socket, is another good way to, again, kind of condition the lats and the rotator cuffs and all that other stuff to kind of, you know, stabilize and engage in that overhead position. I think from there, getting comfortable and strong in the flexed arm hang position is like another big thing. Whether that's overhand or underhand, I think either way is great. But again, grip, lats, arms, shoulders, your abs, getting comfortable with a flexed arm hang, ideally like with your chin at, around, or over the bar. I think for 30 seconds is like another big performance standard. And honestly, if you can hold a flexed arm hang and slowly lower yourself down into a straight arm hang, for like, you know, another, you know, 15 seconds or so. So basically, if you can kind of like work up to approximately 45 seconds to a minute under tension, flexed arm to straight arm hang. If you can do that like 2 or 3 times under control, you're probably really close to being in the ballpark of being able to do a pull-up.
Mm.
I would say to kind of fill in the gaps, I think doing a lot of horizontal rows, I think doing some assisted pull-ups are good. I think doing some like eccentric, just jumping up and just doing slow negatives is also valuable. There's some other assistance exercises like the lat fly, which I have detailed in some content that's a little hard to explain, but it's essentially like going from, or a seat row, I think is maybe what I call it, but basically going from like a body weight row position with straight arms, so your back is like in a tabletop horizontal to the ground, and then just sitting your butt down while simultaneously bending your elbows into a flexed arm hang position. If you're on like a TRX or a low bar where you're able to keep your feet on the floor.
Hmm.
It's a little hard to describe, but that's another like useful assistance exercise. But again, at the end of the day, I think it's being really strong and confident with a straight and flexed arm hang position. I think if you really put your time in there, like the pull-up eventually comes along with it.
I might try the TRX version that you're talking about with a couple clients that have been working on pull-ups. I tend to gravitate to a very simple one because I have the ability to do this. So I don't run through any of those progressions because I have a very simple. My squat racks are super adjustable in terms of like where the J arms can go up and down on the rack. Like super, like every inch I can move them. So what I do is I just start testing my clients kind of where they're at. And so I'll take a note on their program, be like, you know, blue band at peg 9. I've labeled all my holes so I know which ones they're at. It's also easier to move those J arms faster because they're all labeled. So I'll be like, and it goes, the numbers go from 1 at the top to 15 at the bottom or 14, whatever the last number is. So about 7 or 6 is about where a lot of people are. So like blue band at 6, got 8 reps or whatever. And we just keep working on that blue band at 6 for a while. And then when they get more comfortable, lower it to 7.
So you've got the band
across the J arms. Yeah, so yeah. Not hanging from the pull-up bar, across the two J arms so they can step on it with both feet.
Yeah.
Now the advantage being that it is super progressible, right? Like I can just do this infinity until they get strong enough. And the problem though is that to your point, as far as like the flexed hang or the dead hang, the band is helping them in the weakest position of their pull-up, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not having to like really dig in and get those lats engaged. They can kind of bounce out of the hole with that band. That's why I'm thinking about moving either to borrowing a couple of your ideas or that TRX version. The way I'm thinking of it is like the handles are pretty high. So like, for example, like I'm not sitting on the floor, but like I have my feet like kind of bent with my butt hanging off the floor, and I can kind of use my feet to sort of push my, kind of like that, right? That's what you're talking about. It's like the audience can't see what I'm doing, but like my butt's hovering, TRX handles are overhead. I'm kind of pushing with my feet a little bit, pulling, lowering. So I would get to a dead hang, my butt would not be on the floor. Or it could be on the floor, but like barely.
Yeah, I'll maybe forward a video.
Anyway. So
but you could also do that with a bar on your J-hooks.
Right.
As well.
That's that right, because people easy. Have done that with like the safety, not the safety bar, the Smith.
Rack. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I could do something like that and like maybe have them hover a leg or like dig a heel in or something. I don't know. So they have like one point of contact. I'll play around with it. But again, I've been defaulting to the band almost exclusively because it's just easy to throw together and adjust on the fly. So I don't know. I'll keep playing around with it. The only disadvantage of pull-ups at my gym is that the rack has to be used exclusively for pull-ups. You want to bench or you want to squat,
right.
Can't be doing pull-ups at the same time. So usually they come in first for everybody. I'm like, racks are clear, pull-ups. Knock it out, and then we go to your point, lots of horizontal rowing later in the workout. But I try to front-load the workouts with pull-ups because we're about to be putting bars in there. So knock them out, get them done, let's move on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Word.
Cool, man.
Is that our time?
Just about.
Oh, nicely done, us.
Well, another Labor Day down. I feel like this is our third, right?
We
started the podcast.
No, it started in January of 21, so this would be our second Labor Day.
Did we start in January?
Yeah. You're thinking of Memorial Day. We've had 2 Memorial Days and 2 Labor Days.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll get tricky when the baby's here. And then we'll have Thanksgiving and the holidays. I think if we can cross what we got, today's 85.
Yeah.
If we can cross into the 90s, before the baby's here, I think we're doing well. Because we did 50 episodes last year. Mm-hmm. If we get into the 90s somewhere by the end of the year, given all the stuff going on between the holidays and I think Halloween is on a Monday. Mm-hmm. So, and that Halloween is like when the baby will be here.
Right.
Like the 28th is when it's due. So like we'll have a little Halloween baby. So there might be a couple Mondays that we miss somewhere in there, mm-hmm. especially when this baby's here, but we'll settle in and figure it out.
Yeah.
I think we can finish up in the 90s and feel like it was a good year.
For sure.
I mean, 85 episodes, 35 on this year alone,
yeah.
right? Because we did 50 last year.
Right.
Yeah, 35 on the year already. And yeah. it's only September 5th. So we're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll have a big party for big 100.
Yeah. I mean, technically, we could be at like 90. We got about 8 weeks before the baby's here. 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say 6 more podcasts. We could be at 91 before the baby's even here.
Boom.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Just like that. All right. And we got a couple guests coming. All right. All right. It's all good.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of the A to Z No BS Show. Thank you for listening. Hey, we'll see you at the next one.
Goodbye.